Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Welcome to That the Hive podcast, part of the SB Nation network of podcasts. On today's episode, we don't talk about the coronavirus at all. That's not true. We talk about it a little bit at the beginning, but we don't spend too much time on it because I'm sure everybody's heard enough of it everywhere else they get their news. This episode, we talk mostly about the Hornets, how well they've been playing good defense, winning some surprising games, all that good stuff. So let's get started.
To play first half. PJ
What's up, guys? It's Jonathan. I'm joined by Zach. Zach, has anything happened? Do you have anything you need to talk about? I feel like there's nothing to talk about in the NBA.
I can't think of anything, to be honest with you. I haven't turned on my phone or looked at my computer at all. They suspended the NBA season.
Did you see there's like a guy on Twitter who's like, my manager just took in January, took an 8-week sabbatical to a mountain cabin in North Carolina, no phone, no internet or anything. It's like, this guy's going to come back and have his mind blown.
I think the world exploded, yeah. Look, I don't want to be too political on this podcast, Jonathan, but I don't like the coronavirus. I'm just going to say it right now, for the record, it's a bummer.
Anti-coronavirus stance.
Yeah, and obviously for anybody who doesn't know, and I'm sure that you do, the NBA has decided to suspend the season until further notice because of the coronavirus and the potential of fans and players and employees being affected by it. And we've already had two players test positive for the coronavirus. And there are a lot of ways we can approach this, Jonathan, but I love basketball, and I know you do too, and it's taken away one of the things that we love in our lives, and there are bigger fish to fry, and you know, people are losing wages and losing their lives to this disease, and I don't want to make light of that, but I really hate that we've lost a little bit of what we love when it comes to the coronavirus stopping the NBA season midway through, or really three-fourths of the way through.
Yeah, no, it's one of the, like, I always look forward to, like, Hornets game nights. And in basketball, in general, is on my TV almost every night at some point. So it's a weird void to fill. Like, I know, you know, oh, I can't watch my favorite sport on TV is a very minor problem out of all of this compared to what other people have to deal with. But yes, like, looking at it from, you know, we have to look at things through our own lens at certain points. And it's unfortunate that basketball is gone for at least 30 days is the current, like, the initial timeline they've set.
Yeah, and there are people who work with the NBA, especially people who are making lower wages, who are on hourly wages, who don't know when their next paycheck is going to come. And that's a serious issue that both the NBA and the individual teams need to address. And that's something serious, but that's not what we address on this podcast. We address Hornets-specific stuff, NBA-specific stuff, and we wish all those people well. We hope that everybody is healthy and can pay their bills and get groceries and get toilet paper, because apparently everybody decided to just take all the toilet paper.
Toilet paper is the hot button item for this pandemic. I read an article that's like, we tried to find out why people are buying toilet paper, and they asked people like at Costco that were stocking them with toilet paper. They're like, I don't know. Everybody else is buying it, and I'm afraid they're going to run out, so I just had to buy it now. And that makes, you know, people with that attitude. Anyway, I do want to ask about this NBA suspension thing. How did you find out? Were you watching the game? Did you see it online? Like, how did you find out, and what was your initial reaction to it?
I saw it as a notification on my phone, and I heard about the experience through other people watching the Jazz game. Was it the Jazz versus the Rockets?
Thunder, I think.
The Thunder, exactly.
Yeah, because they're in Oklahoma City.
And I, you know, I have been listening to other political podcasts and reading the news, so I was expecting certain things to happen. I was expecting us to watch games with no audience, because that was the first report that
we got.
Yeah, that
was my expectation too, yeah.
Yeah, that they would stop letting fans come into the games. But to actually have the NBA season stop, it's a large hole in my social calendar. It really is. And yeah. I'm sure that my wife and your girlfriend are kind of appreciative that not every night there's NBA basketball on there. Mm-hmm. But how did you hear about it?
So I had a flag football game last night, and I can't remember if it was at halftime or like when the game ended. I grabbed my phone and put it in my pocket. And when I hit my phone, like, I had a ton of notifications, which isn't uncommon that I'll have just like ESPN alerts and Twitter notifications and stuff. Like, I'll have a bunch of them, so I can't really see them all at once. And I saw that a notification that said the Jazz and Thunder game has been postponed due to unforeseen circumstances. And that's all I saw before I just like put my phone away, because I didn't like open it and unlock all the notifications and stuff. And I was like, I wonder if that's coronavirus related. That seems kind of important, but I'll look at that later. And then, and so I put my phone away. I was like talking to my friends after the game, and then I was got in my car and I was about to leave, and I got a message on Slack from Cat Scratch Reader, somebody that worked with Cat Scratch Reader, and he said the NBA suspended the season. I'm like, wait, what? Maybe I need to look at all these Twitter notifications I got. And so I was legit in the parking lot, and I made like a little loop and just parked my car again, and I started scrolling through all the stuff. I was like, oh boy. And then that's how I saw, like, oh, Rudy Gobert has the coronavirus, the Jazz game, the Jazz and Thunder are in quarantine, and they can't leave the locker room. And I was like, oh, well, this is kind of a big deal. And that was how I found out.
It's a crazy big deal, and I don't know what it says about our times, but when I first heard it, I was like, all right, I've really got to investigate whether or not it's true. Because, you know, you hear a lot of things on the internet that are extreme versions of it. Maybe they decided to stop the game. Rudy Gobert has been tested positive for the coronavirus, and then eventually Mitchell tested positive as well. So I thought maybe it was an isolated thing, and how could this huge organization responsible for tens of thousands of jobs decide to stop the season? And they certainly have. You know, whether or not it's the right or wrong decision, they certainly don't pay me enough to say that, right? I do believe that taking steps to making people safe, not only the millionaire players, the $100,000 paid players, but also the employees and every, you know, contracted company that works with the NBA, making them safe is a important step through this, you know.
Yeah, you can't have the fans all out there. Like, that's a huge gathering for people to spread it. Like, even on a smaller scale, like the reporters in the locker room and in the press rooms after games, the arena staff, like the ushers, and then I have to interact with all these people. And then when, even if it's just one player, I think I saw a post that like 2 weeks and have every team have a connection to the Jazz. You know, like, the Jazz played whoever, and then they played the Thunder, and then they went and played like the Raptors on Monday or something. And so, like, and then the day before that, the Raptors played someone else. So, like, you know, there's a lot of people that have indirectly come in contact with people that have come in contact with Rudy Gobert within, like, just a short span of a few days. So I understand what the league's like. Maybe it better to be safe than sorry on this. Like, they're not going to regret, I don't think, suspending the season for 30 days, but they very well could majorly regret doing nothing about it.
Feels weird, though, Jonathan.
Oh, it feels very weird.
Feels very weird.
I mean, we've never seen it before. And to make matters worse, literally every sport is suspended right now. Like, we have nothing to turn to in the absence of basketball.
Sure. I mean, you know, we could turn to our loved ones. We could turn to philosophy. We could turn to, you know, the nature and stuff like that. But sure, you're right. There's nothing
we
else
have
to
no
turn
sports.
To because there's no sports going
we
on.
Need
you're
sports.
100% right. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's, I don't really know what else to say about it. Like I said, the NBA said it's going to be a 30-day initial time frame. They're going to reevaluate then. I think they're going to have every player tested. I saw that they're going to have every player tested at some point during that 30 days just to make, you know, so they know who, you know, can't be in contact with who and all that stuff.
Well, it's good for the NBA that they have access to the test. Hopefully everyone else around the country will soon have access to this,
yes.
to this test. What it interrupted was some really interesting, really entertaining Charlotte Hornets basketball, which is, you know, when you put it in the context of the coronavirus is small, but was a really fun week of basketball, Jonathan.
Yeah, it did feel weird on that note. Like, so I posted a real quick thing that just said, hey, the NBA suspended the season. I posted that on the Hive while I was watching the replay, like my recording of the Hornets and Heat game. And it felt very weird to be just like talking about how well the Hornets were playing in that game, you know, knowing the grand scheme of things that was going on around it. But yes, from a basketball point of view, the Hornets have been playing both good and entertaining basketball.
Yes, good. And I would say the good is up and down. Atlanta double overtime game. I don't know if there was good basketball played by either team. during that game, but it was certainly interesting. It was a crazy game. Terry Rozier goes for 40 there, but I don't know if you want to start with Atlanta.
We'll go through the games since the Bucks game. I thought the results were basically perfect, right? Like they played down to the wire against the Spurs. They played down to the wire against the Nuggets, but then they lost the end. It's like that's exactly what you want to see from a rebuilding team. The Rockets game was unique.
It was weird. I do want to pause real quick at the San Antonio game. Just give a quick shout out to Coach Tim Duncan.
I totally forgot about that.
Yeah, I know. There's been some things that's been happening. I don't know if you've been watching the news. But you know, I have no idea how someone can affect one game as the, you know, pseudo head coach of that team for that one game. But it was fun to see him be the head coach there. He obviously has a lot of clout and a lot of gravitas on that team anyway. So what Tim Duncan says to those players means a lot, I think. But it was a close game, and I thought it was again, the defense is really showing on this run, and Lord, at least there's some defense going on. You know?
I have a stat about that defense that I'm gonna bring up in a little bit.
What showed to you in that Houston game that you wanted to highlight?
They basically played like a kind of a de facto zone. Like, and then this goes to the defense again against James Harden. Where they had help on the elbows, and they're like, so they took away James Harden's driving lanes, and they're like, we're gonna make James Harden, we're not gonna let him get deep in the paint, and we're gonna put ourselves in positions for quick closeouts where the shooters are, because the shooters are stationary in the way the Rockets run their offense. And for one, I think it's a big credit to the young players on the team to basically kind of implement a special defense for a certain opponent. Like on, you know, it's probably kind of on a whim. It's not something they're going to practice all the time. It's like, hey, this is going to be our James Harden defense. This is what you're going to do. And they executed it to perfection. And the Rockets, who are a good basketball team, had no answer for it. And James Harden had no answer for it. He turned the ball over 10 times. Aside from his usual shenanigans that gets him a bunch of free throws, he couldn't put the ball in the basket. And he just looked very uncomfortable, which is not common for James Harden. So I thought that was a big, you know, a very good example of the Hornets showing how quickly they can adapt on defense, and shows what kind of James Borrego is capable of as a tactician.
And I think it also shows how, I mean, I don't want to say two-dimensional, but how different the team is without Westbrook. He didn't play that game. And as much as Harden struggled, still ended up with a triple-double that night. But yeah,
quadruple double if you count the turnovers.
Oh, good call. Good call. I like it. But yeah, I agree with you. Instilling a defensive tactic and having the team adopt it, I thought was I see where you're coming from on that side.
Yeah, so I thought that was good. Ended up, you know, taking a 20-0 lead in the first 6 minutes of a game is fun to watch.
It is fun to watch whenever the Hornets do something like that, though, because it's the NBA and because it's Charlotte Hornets. I'm like, all right, well, let me get past this commercial break and see what we do next.
Yeah, and I mean, they very quickly lost that lead. I think the Rockets were back within like two possessions in like 5 minutes in the second quarter. But that first 6 minutes where the Rockets had more turnovers than shot attempts for the first several minutes of the game. I think they had like five or six turnovers before they even made a shot. Like that was fun.
Rozier too. Rozier and during the Houston game and really all along this streak has been playing some really good basketball. I don't highlight him enough.
Yeah.
Obviously
I don't think anybody does.
40 more. Yeah, I mean the man makes a lot of money and maybe you're expected to play in that way all the time when you make that much money. But it's good to see someone like Terry Rozier doing it sometimes versus someone like Nick Batum who especially nowadays just is a DNP most games.
Yeah. And credit to Nick, by the way. Did you see that article about him?
No.
Being the he basically apologized, said, "Yeah, I'm sorry I've been so bad. But I'm going to do my best." You know, he's like, "I know I'm not in the future plans for this team and stuff, so I'm going to do my best to be a cheerleader and do all the right stuff as a veteran on the bench for the young guys and stuff like that." So like, okay, that's good. Good for you, Nick.
That's nice, and we've talked about it before, and I'll be real quick on this. I want to make this very clear. He has nothing to apologize for. If the Charlotte Hornets want to pay me $120 million to get, like, booed at or to get talked down to on some podcast to regular Joes, do it. Please do it. I'll take all of it and sit on that bench and, like he said, be a great cheerleader for the team. You know, he's got nothing to apologize for.
You take $25 million a year to have people that are much worse than you at basketball talk about how bad you are at basketball?
I'd have to read the full contract, Jonathan. You know, I'd have to read the ins and outs, but I'd consider it. I'm just saying, I'd consider it, Charlotte Hornets.
So the last two games before we get to the present day, the Hawks game, watching it, like, you know, 143
points.
What a weird game. The Hawks, obviously, 143 points isn't ideal, and the Hornets' defense wasn't as crisp as it had been. And I did think the Hornets were somewhat a victim of the Hawks just being hot that night. Like, there are nights where you do the right thing and the other team just still makes their shots. And it felt a little bit like that. To an extent.
Yeah, and I made note of this while I was watching the game, and so it might be hard to bring your mind back to the end of the regular time during that game.
Yeah,
Terry Rozier playing made some really weird choices on the defensive end of that game, left people open for three pointers, left the lane open for people to dig in. I didn't understand that, you know, as much praise as I want to give Terry Rozier for the streak and for playing really well, it was just there were some decisions, and your boy, Caleb Martin, lost the game for the Hornets during that Hawks game.
The
fouls. I mean, there were two fouls back-to-back where, A, he was caught reaching in on,
on Trae Young, yeah.
Yeah, on Trae Young. And I think there was a corner three that he fouled
into him, yeah.
I
think the NBA 2-minute report said he didn't foul him, like he blocked the shot. But for both plays, I think both plays you could argue that he didn't commit a foul. But he put himself in a position. He put the refs in a position to make a call when he didn't have to.
Right.
Like Trae Young's dribbling around 30 feet from the basket with 2 seconds left on the clock. You have no reason to try to poke the ball away. Like, he's going to take a shot that he doesn't want, that he's not going to be able to make, or is a very low percentage shot. Same thing contesting a three-pointer in the corner like that. Like, you don't need to block it. You need to just affect the shot. So, yeah, there's a problem in that. We'll talk more about the Martins in a little bit. But talk about the Hawks game. I thought generally the Hornets played well. Just they just couldn't keep up with the Hawks, who I think were kind of playing out of their minds.
Yes, and losing a double overtime game when you're, you know, kind of positioning yourself in that 7th, 6th pick of the draft is fine for me. And again, another entertaining game where it was like you, me, and the announcers watching the game in, with like time left in the second quarter, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And then now, and then Wednesday night, the Hornets, wins typically, like in general, aren't the best right now because, you know, draft positioning and all that stuff. But knowing now that we're in the hiatus and stuff, I do think this win over the Heat, even if they were missing Jimmy Butler, real good momentum builder, confidence builder going into the time off. And the Hornets played really well. Like the Heat hit 16 of their first 19 shots. But again, it felt like that was just kind of bad luck on defense. Like Derrick Jones made 3 threes in the first quarter. He's never made more than 3 threes in a game in his career.
Coming off the dunk contest win.
Yeah. Do you know what Derrick Jones, how many threes he had made in the last five games before Wednesday night?
So I'm not going to back down to a challenge. I'm going to say 5 threes.
In the last four games before the Hornets game, he made zero. He was 0 for 10. He was 0 for 10 from three in the four games prior to Wednesday night. And then he just decided that he was hot, and he made 3 threes in a row to start the game. So I thought that was kind of out of the Hornets' control. But then credit to them for not rolling over and dying. When a superior team takes a big lead on them, they did what they did, what the Rockets did. Made a huge run to start the second quarter and started the game over, basically.
Yeah, and you know me, I am all about the regression to the mean when it comes to Devontae Graham, but watching him be little junior Kemba out there,
yeah,
you know, 30 points, doing shake and bake things, pulling up from three, almost looks like the follow through on a shot is the same as Kemba's follow through on a shot. Just it's good to see. It's echoes of a ghost that once was, you know what I mean? It was fun to see. And you know, they're probably going to make a mistake and pay Devontae Graham a bunch of money, but it's good to see somebody evolve their game. You know,
do you think he's still most improved player
for the league?
Yeah. Do you think he's going to go to like Sabonis or Adebayo or somebody that was an all-star or Tatum?
Oh, of course, it's going to go to Boston, of course. It'll go to Houston. I mean, everything goes to Boston, right? But
yeah,
I don't like the most improved player award, basically, because a lot of times it goes to second-year players who are just getting used to the speed of the NBA and becoming better at it. However, I really like Devontae Graham, and if the best, most improved award he could get is a huge contract.
I guess that's true. So, in all those games, I wanted to bring it up, and there's going to be an article about this on At the Hive today. Maybe you've already seen it. Maybe it'll be up later today, depending on when you listen to this. But dating back to February 10th, the Hornets beat the Pistons 87-76 in a game that is in a score that should belong in like 1998. Starting with that game, the Hornets are 10th in the NBA in defensive rating. And that's a sample of like 12 games. So it's not just like a visual, like eye test, like, oh, they look like they're more connected. Like they're really locking down teams.
Playing better defense, right?
Yeah. And there was a stretch earlier this season where like there was like a 1 or 2 week stretch where the Hornets played really good defense and people were excited about it. And I think I even wrote like, hey, let's pump the brakes on this. Like the other teams are just missing a ton of open shots. But it feels different this time. Like, there are more instances of, you know, like a team will make a play and they'll drive to the basket and they'll beat their man, but there'll be a Hornet waiting for them and they'll kick it out to an open player, but somehow there'll be another Hornet waiting there. And there are a lot more instances of it looking like there are like six players on the court for the Hornets and the offense, the other team just can't find any open players no matter what they do. And that's been fun to watch.
And they've been playing some of the best teams in the league in that 12-game stretch. You know, no slack teams. We're talking about the Heat, the Rockets, the Bucks. They held the Bucks to 93, although they lost in that game because we only scored 85 points. They held the Bucks to 93.
Yeah, first team in over a year to do that.
Yeah, the Raptors, the Nets. I mean, it's interesting to see the defense in this younger team solidify a little bit. Is there a player that you see playing defense better? My thoughts go a little bit to Bridges. Maybe Washington is doing some more rebounds. What do you think?
At Bridges, I think everybody individually is doing better. I think what's affecting it more than I would have ever expected is the Martin twins and McDaniels.
Oh, handsy Martin twins, huh?
The Martin twins, and this is a little fun fact, and I don't have it in front of me at the moment because it's going to be in the article later. But the Hornets' defense have played, I think, 233 possessions more, and their defensive rating is, with those two on the floor together, is about the same as the Bucks' defensive rating for the season, which is the best in the league. Obviously, small sample, but in the small sample we have so far, when the Martins play together, the Hornets teams can't score on the Hornets.
Oh, wow. We talked about it a little bit during the Hawks game, is that kind of, and Westbrook was criticized in his career earlier when he was younger, is that when you're taking those types of stealing chances, it can go one way or the other. It's a coin flip. You know, you can get that foul. You can let the offensive player get past you because you're trying to go for that steal. So it'll be interesting to see how they balance that as their career, or really how Cody balances it when his career goes on. You know, you and I have talked about Caleb before, but it's good to see that at least there's some defensive identity forming.
Yeah.
We were talking before the pod that Borrego was on the Ryan Russillo podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And he was talking about, you know, having one of the younger teams in the league. It was second, I think, in the league for most of the season and has been first for a while. So he's playing.
Yeah, since like the All-Star break or something. Yeah,
mostly young players. And just real quick, Borrego, you know, going to a rival podcast. it's not a good look. We're a local podcast. You should really come on our podcast. But I guess, you know, Ryan Russillo is a big time. It's fine. You know, I can do push ups too.
Russillo does consider us one of his bigger rivals. I've often heard that.
Oh, for sure, for sure. He spends too much time in the gym. I've always said it. But hearing him talk to Russillo about having a younger team, what I like about that is that it seems like Borrego is invested in the future of this team, which means that hopefully what that means is that the upper management knows that these losses, knows that these struggles are building up to something, whether that be the players themselves growing or the players themselves becoming trade pieces in future deals, you know?
Yeah, he did say something, and he said it kind of in passing, so it wasn't really expounded upon at all, but he mentioned that the team basically has been better than even he's like maybe even better than I expected before the season started, you know, which I think if this is a good organization, which obviously that's a debatable topic depending on who you ask, but I think the organization from what they've said is of one mind in like their expectations for the team and what they want to do going forward. So James Borrego says the team is playing better than he thinks they should, that he expected going into the season. I think that speaks for the organization as a whole, that their expectations going into the season were, hey, we know what we have, see what the young guys can do, make them better, see what we've got, and they've outperformed everybody's expectations. And I think that is good. Like, they know what they're doing.
Yeah, they kind of know what they're doing. He also talked about some surprise with Devonte Graham, how Devonte Graham's blown up, and I was surprised by Devonte Graham, and it's fun to see that as a surprise on the outside. I don't want my organization to be surprised by that. You know, I really don't. You know, you saw this guy evolve. You should have seen his growth. And we're, you know, with all apologies to Rozier, we paid him $20 million a year to be a point guard when there was a guy on our team who literally is able to be our point guard right now, especially if you're going to play all your young players. So I'm excited that they have patience, but I also get worried when I hear what a surprise and how happy we are that Devonte Graham is taking this step forward.
I think as an organization, you want to be conservative with your projections for your players. You know, like Devonte Graham couldn't see the floor as a rookie. Obviously, Kemba Walker and Tony Parker here apart a lot to do that. I don't think you want to project that your mostly G League point guard is going to take a leap into being a 20-point-per-game scorer over one offseason. And I think that's where their surprise is. Hopefully they knew he had something resembling that like ability within him. I don't think it's like a total shock, but yeah. I think maybe the volume in which he's succeeding has been the bigger surprise.
And not to relitigate the 2018 season or anything, but if you knew you were going to shortchange your star player and you are going to draft and then trade Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, maybe you don't do that with the Clippers and you keep, you know, some say the best young point guard in the league, which we don't have to get into. That's a whole conversation. That's the kind of planning stuff that I always worry about the Hornets.
The one thing that kind of struck me about Borrego's interview, and you kind of touched on it with him talking about the age of the team, I really like how detailed his knowledge is of what his team is good and not good at. Like, he was pulling up stats of like the team's offensive rating and clutch situations off the top of his head, and like the average age of his team compared to the rest of the league, and he's got all of this stuff just like he clearly. He has people on his staff that are like, you know, self-scouting, like, what are we good at? What are we not good at? You know, like, what do we need to get better at? Not just these are the principles and we're just going to do what I say we need to do based on my gut because I'm a coach and I know what I'm doing because I'm a coach.
Right. Then he's using the I hear what you're saying. I expect that of coaches. Maybe that's wrong of me to do.
No, but I do think there are older school coaches that probably don't pay that. You know, you've heard it, especially in other sports, but I'm sure there's still some basketball coaches that are still like, I don't pay attention to, you know, things like that. I see what I see it on the film. I see it when I'm coaching the team. I know what we need to do. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and anytime I've heard Borrego talk, I've been impressed and with his knowledge. There was a more ambitious basketball writer a couple years ago who wanted to do a deep dive into Borrego. His name was Zachary Brown. He no longer exists, but I like the way he thinks, and I also have liked the way he's set up his defense.
Yeah, and I like the Spurs things he's brought to the table, and you know, defining roles and giving players jobs so they know what they're doing and they know what's expected of them, as opposed to just go out there and do your best, kids.
Do you think you would win in a bench press contest against Ryan Russillo? And when can we set that up?
Yes. I don't think so. I don't know how much he benches. Russillo press. Let's see what we got here.
Did you just Google Russillo bench press?
I think he can do more than me, but I might be able to make it a fight.
Let's do it. Let's put it to the test.
All right, we'll take a break real quick. We'll finish up on this, and we'll do Buzz and It Wasn't before we wrap up the show.
Head out into oblivion.
Head into the oblivion, into the abyss.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome back to the At the Hive podcast. We got a couple more minutes left before we send you on your way. We got some buzzing and wasn't, and that's about it. Since there's not a preview, there's nothing to preview. Zach, we'll start with you. Who is buzzing right now?
So I've got to give it to this guy because I have really made it hard for him over the season because he got paid a lot of money and there's been a lot of responsibility on his shoulders, but especially the past week. Terry Rozier has really stepped up his game and stepped up his leadership on this team. And I'll say this. I haven't highlighted enough how there's been no pouting. There's been no talk with the media. He has really been a solid piece of this team. And he's been more than that for the past 2 weeks. He's been scoring a bunch of points, defending the best players on the opposition, and really being the player that is worth somewhere around $14 to $15 million, maybe not $20 million, but you know, it can be a solid piece for this team going into the future, whatever future we see.
and to add to your point, in the last four games he's averaging 26 points per game and shooting 55% from three. Pretty good numbers.
What you need for your starting point guard.
Yeah, and I think people have had some issues with him because he was supposed to be like the point guard, and that hasn't really worked out in that sense. But it turns out he's a really good like two guard if he's got someone like Devontae Graham to play off of. And there's nothing wrong. Like he can play that role well. He's got the size for it. He's got the shot for it. He's got the mentality for it. There's nothing wrong with Terry Rozier being better as a two than a point guard, even if that wasn't the original goal. Sometimes you got to make adjustments on the fly.
Yes, and I don't blame Terry Rozier for not being positioned in the best place. You know, it's not his fault that he got overpaid and put that on his shoulders. It's obviously the management of the Hornets that I blame for that kind of stuff. And Terry Rozier, you know, at the beginning of this, I was so against this contract, and I'm still against this contract. But one of the reasons that I was against this contract is I thought Terry Rozier would be a vocal person in the locker room who was not with the team, who was not willing to do what was needed to be done for this team to gel. And that has not been true, and I was wrong about that. And
yeah,
that's probably the last time you'll hear that I was wrong, because I'm normally right. 90,000% of the time, you know.
Yeah, you're never wrong. Never wrong, Zach.
No, so that's what they call me round the corner.
Yeah.
So who's your buzzing candidate, Jonathan?
Is the other backcourt mate. It's Devontae Graham. I have more stats. Devontae Graham, you know, he went cold for a while and he kind of started to find it a little bit heading into the All-Star break. And then he won the All-Star break. He did a three-point shootout. He played well in the Rising Stars game. And it's like, all right, you know, time off. He'll come back ready to go, all reinvigorated after hitting that kind of rookie wall, so to speak. And he came out and went 1-for-17 from the field in the two games outside of the All-Star break and 0-for-8 from three. James Borrego is like, hey, why don't you take the next game off? And the Hornets lost by 40. Since that, it's been seven games. He's averaging 23 points per game, shooting 45% from the field and 41% from three. So the game off seemed to help, and he seems to have recaptured the magic that he had going for him early in the season. And that culminated with a 30-point game against the Heat, and he hit some daggers against the Heat.
And some again, I was talking about it before, some reminiscent Kemba positions where he'd get someone would come up for the high screen, he'd get the screen, but instead of taking the screen, he would take like three dribbles, step back, and hit that like kind of long corner three. It's been really fun to watch Devontae Graham play. Where do you put Devontae Graham 3 years from now, let's say? What type of player do you think he is in 3 years?
Best player in the NBA.
Okay. All right. Good prediction.
No. It's hard to say because obviously he can't like the progression from year one to year two and like project that out, because if we did, he really would be the best player in the NBA in a couple years.
Right.
But I think he'll be like a solid starting point guard. Like, I don't think he's going to be Kimball level, like all-star level, but I think he'll be a starting point guard, and he'll be good enough to where you can look at the team and be like, point guard, at least starting point guard is good. We don't have to like go out of our way to look for a new one. You know, like Devontae Graham's a good enough point guard for the time being to build a team that's good. Maybe not like championship level good, but at least, you know, to take the next step into the playoffs and stuff with Devontae Graham at point guard, assuming the cast around him gets better.
There's a regression to the mean thing that I talk about with Devontae Graham all the time, but I'll be rooting for Devontae Graham for the rest of his career. I like the way he plays. I like his passion. He, you know, I think like you were talking about before, I think it was instilled with Kemba Walker and Tony Parker, and his vision has grown as well. I'll be rooting for Devontae Graham on or off the Hornets for the rest of his career.
He seems like such a nice kid. I can't remember. I don't remember what the interview was, but I think it was like a media day. They asked him like what his goals for the season were, and one of them was just, I just want to have fun. This is really cool to be an NBA player. Like, I like that.
Yeah, respect and shout that. Out to the braids too. Loving the braids, loving the wave. I like it a lot.
Yeah, I like the hair. I like the hair, the big hair when he had it too. Like, he's always winning with the hair.
Should we get to the wasn't?
Yeah, let's go to the wasn't because I'm ready for this.
You want me to go first?
Yeah, you go. I'll go first.
Go ahead.
But no, you go first because mine ties into yours. You go first. It kind of leads. One leads to the other.
And normally I would attach this to the Hornets, but obviously we're all affected by what Rudy Gobert did. Rudy Gobert, the media was told to step back from the players. I can't remember what the actual distance was. I think it was 6 feet.
Yeah, that's that's what it's been most places. I don't know if it's been that media specifically, but yeah, the general recommendation has been at least 6 feet.
In order to keep everybody safe, or at least try to hold back this huge pandemic that the world is trying to deal with right now. Rudy Gobert, who seems like a fun-loving guy, I don't want to take that from him, is finishing his press conference and just decides to rub his hands over all of the microphones on the table before he walks out. By the time you listen to this, everybody will have seen this footage. Probably everybody has already seen this footage.
Yeah.
Just irresponsible. I mean, it's irresponsible as a player, as a human being, as a role model for people. I know it's fun. And Jonathan, I would do this move 100%. I would do something like this as a joke.
Yeah.
It would all be well and good, Jonathan, if the man wasn't didn't test positive for the coronavirus hours later, literally hours later. So you're my wasn't candidate, Rudy Gobert. I don't think you're a bad person. He's tweeted, you know, how embarrassed he feels about doing that kind of stuff. His teammate has been tested positive, which isn't a great thing. But just keep safe out there, guys. Please wash your hands.
Yeah, I think we've gotten to the point where, like, the jokes, like, I think most everybody at some point has made some coronavirus joke, like, they sneeze and, like, oh, it's coronavirus, you know, things like that, and, like, oh, I'm gonna give you the coronavirus. But, yeah, Rudy Gobert making those jokes, apparently, according to what Adrian Wojnarowski tweeted about him, like, touching people's stuff a lot, being like, oh, I'm gonna give you the coronavirus, and then, of all people, you being the one to be, like, the NBA's patient zero, so to speak, not his best moment.
Really not. And again, I'm not trying to vilify him on, you know, think he's a bad person or anything. Nah. Not a great look though.
I think he's just a guy who's trying to have fun, make light of a situation, try to find the humor in a situation, and it just backfired in the most spectacular fashion.
Literally may have infected people with a virus. Yeah, not great.
Yeah, not the best. And my wasn't is because of Rudy Gobert. It's everybody in the entire NBA because nobody gets to play basketball. So there is no NBA right now.
It makes me so sad, Jonathan. It really does. I love this game. I love watching the NBA. The Lakers are playing amazing basketball. LeBron James is having an insane season. Giannis is, it's so awesome to watch Giannis play basketball. There are so many, and you know, you and I get to do this really fun podcast. I'm inconsolable about basketball, although I know there are a million other things I should be inconsolable about.
Yeah. And on that point, At the Hive is going to keep posting content. I'm going to try to have, we're going to try to have stuff pretty much can, even though, you know, there's nothing actively happening in the NBA, whether it be Hornets stuff or like draft prospect stuff or miscellaneous things just to pass the time, to keep the site, you know, active and alive and keep you guys with stuff to talk about and to read. We're going to try to do this podcast again, probably within the 30 days before the NBA resumes, assuming, and we'll scrounge up some stuff to talk about. So you may be devoid of NBA basketball to watch and be totally ripped away of content from your favorite Hornets blog.
And your favorite Hornets podcast, my friend.
And your favorite Hornets
podcast. We will be there.
We are not on hiatus. We are not suspended indefinitely. We're still going strong because we don't actually have to see each other.
Be safe. Please wash your hands. Think about your neighbors and be patient with people. You know, why do you need to hear it from me? You probably don't, but I assume that the small platform that I have, just be patient with people and remember we're all neighbors and sharing one globe, yada, yada.
All that stuff, yes. And I'll add to that, wash your hands again, because maybe the more people you hear say it, people will actually do it. And don't pretend to wash your hands so people think you're washing your hands. That doesn't help anybody. Actually wash your hands.
Don't just turn on the water and do the action. That's not helping anybody.
It's not helping anybody. It will not kill any virus. Actually wash your hands. And with that, we will see you guys later.
Peace out.